I'm Austin Lugo.
I'm Brandon Hess.
And this is the Nom Nom Project. So, Brandon, this week we had a pretty eclectic week. We dived into a lot of different things. A lot of the things, though, do have to do with Vietnamese mythology, which we have touched on in the past. But as you and I have talked about before, Vietnamese mythology is an absolutely fascinating topic because it is inspired very much by the cultures that surround it, as all mythologies are, but with its own quirks. And at least I find it one of the most interesting ways to learn about a culture, a people, a country, because it defines their morals, their ethics, the ways they see the world. And I would certainly say that some of the things we looked at this week do define those things. So, Brandon, this first question is for you. Who is the Vietnamese water deity?
Lạc Long Quan. Next question? No. So, we actually talked about Lạc Long Quan a while ago because I think it is a feminine spirit, I believe. Yes. No, it's male spirit, masculine spirit. So Lạc Long Quan is the supposed father of Vietnamese people. And there was a story we talked about a while ago where he unified with the mountain spirit to lay 100 eggs, which would eventually become all the Vietnamese people. That's not the only story that pertains to Lạc Long Quan, though. There's a couple myths of his involvement in slaying various Vietnamese beasts in ancient times. The first of these is a monster fish, which seems to symbolize the inhospitability of the ocean, which then was considered just the sea. I guess they didn't know how big it really was. I think the idea with the monster fish is just that whenever there's a big storm that shipwrecks a large boat, it would be blamed on the monster fish. And so there came this tale of how Lạc Long Quan would go out and slay the monster fish to make the sea more hospitable and provide good fortune for the fishers in the water. And then there's also the slaying of the nine-tailed fox, which, despite its name as the nine-tailed fox, it's not real clear what the nine tails really symbolize there. I think I might have missed something in translation. But essentially, the nine-tailed fox is like a symbol of jealousy or marital infidelity. So the nine-tailed fox lives in a cave, as it goes, deep beneath the earth, and will occasionally take on a human form to lure people back to its cave to, like, seduce them, when in reality it is just going to eat them, as you do.
So it's like a real Medusa situation.
Very much so, yes. And so that nine-tailed fox has since been slain by Lạc Long Quan, fortunately for us. And I think that there's also a story about the descendants of Lạc Long Quan, like where it came from. It appears to have been the descendant of some dragons, I believe. And not just a dragon, but also a fairy, I think. So,
like half fairy, half dragon?
Exactly.
Badass.
It's like a halfling. I was going to make a D&D joke there. I've decided I'm not going to, though. So Lạc Long Quan is actually like, and this is the case for a lot of Vietnamese mythology, it's very integrated into modern Vietnamese society. So, like, you'll find a lot of things named after Lạc Long Quan in Vietnam. Specifically, a lot of street signs that are named after him. That's the most obvious one. I think you'll also find, like, stores and restaurants and shops named after him, too.
So, is there just this one fish monster? Or are they coming up all the time and he's constantly slaying different fish monsters?
Well, he only slew one fish monster, and that was, like, off of the Cát Bà Island. And it's off of that island that he slays the monster fish. But my understanding is that there's actually, like, lots of monster fish out there. Maybe not specifically monster fish, but just, like, creatures of the ocean. And the one which Lạc Long Quan slew was the monster fish. So perhaps the biggest one.
Of course, the fox is in most mythologies across the world. Typically, it is a sly, mischievous creature. It is very similar to, say, the Native American coyote, sort of a classic trickster figure. a Loki of sorts, in the sense that they're not necessarily the good guy of the situation, but they often help us learn valuable lessons through their mischievous ways. And it seems that in this case, the nine-tailed fox, which perhaps has something to do with, I believe it's Confucianism, maybe it's Buddhism, the nine pillars. It's one of them. I don't want to pick the wrong one, but I know one of these, it's not Taoism. It might be Confucianism. It might be Buddhism. I'm kind of leaning towards Buddhism at this point.
I'm feeling Buddhism too, yeah.
But there's these nine pillars of sin, I think, that you have to overcome to transcend humanity. So perhaps...
Oh, yes, yes. It definitely is Buddhism. I've heard of this before.
Okay. So perhaps has something to do with that. And the fox represents the nine sins. And I guess... he represents those nine sins when he's in human form via seducing or greed or what have you. I don't know exactly what the nine are. It's been a hot minute since I've studied Buddhism. I did take a bit of a Buddhist journey myself. I thought myself a bit of a Buddhist for a little while, but that has since transitioned into Taoism, which of course is also very important and big in Vietnam. I consider myself a Taoist. Although a true Taoist wouldn't call himself a Taoist, because as a Taoist, you don't believe or not believe in anything. You just accept the world as it is.
See, my problem with Buddhism is that the ultimate Buddhist is just a guy who sits around and does nothing. And it seems nice, I guess, but I like my worldly pleasures too much.
Very Epicurean in that way. Plus, you know, once you transcend in Buddhism, the like ultimate goal is nothingness, which
seems quite peaceful, really.
I guess. I mean, I'm sure it's peaceful, but you know, also just an eternity of nothing, which, hey, you know what? If that's your way of life, all the more power to you.
The vibe I'm getting is that it's more about getting to the nothing. My feeling is that like the nothingness kind of sucks, but it's like once you get there, you're like, oh, everything else sucked more. So now I can just have the feeling of not sucking. As much. That's philosophy, baby.
That's philosophy for you. Philosophy with Brandon Hess. This is now just a philosophy podcast.
Oh, yeah. We're supposed to talk about Vietnamese mythology, my bad.
So he slays a monster fish. He slays a nine-tailed fox. Was there a third thing he slayed?
No. Not that I know of.
Okay. So he just slays those two things.
Right.
Okay. Been kind of lazy the last couple thousand years.
Very much so, yes. Mythology only really exists within the hindsight of 1,000 years, I feel. Like, there's never a myth that's less than 2,000 years old. There's no Lek Long Quan of, like, 10 years ago. Because that's just, like, your grandpa. So it can't really work like that.
Well, this water deity sounds pretty badass. Clearly doing the work that needs to be done. So, good for you, Lek Long Quan, slaying all of those fish and foxes. Good for you.
No one tell PETA about this, man. Jeez.
All right, moving on to our next mythology question, which is for me. You asked me about Thon Tru Troy. So we've talked about creation myths in the past when it comes to Vietnam. We've talked about Lek Long Thong and the mountain gods and many other creation myths. This myth is sort of the Genesis myth, I suppose, if you were to use biblical terms. It is the creation of heaven and earth. So according to the mythology, at the beginning, there was darkness and chaos, which sounds pretty terrifying, if you ask me. Definitely more terrifying than the nothingness of the Christian world. But that always confuses me too, because how can there be nothing, but there's also God? This is also confusing because Thon Tru Troy exists before anything. Like, there's darkness, chaos, and then like this Thon Tru Troy guy shows up. I don't know how he shows up.
Has anyone considered that maybe Thon Tru Troy is the chaos? Or am I blaspheming?
That's a plot twist right there. I mean, he could be. I don't know. He comes out of this darkness and he's like, you know what? We need to throw some existence into here. Like, this is just, there's not enough existence going on. So he's like, boom, existence. But the problem is, it's all flat. Classic flat earther situation. There's no heaven, there's no earth, there's just this like single line. Basically, the entire universe is one dimension. And Thanh Truc Choy is a giant. And he's like, this just isn't going to work. Like this whole one dimension thing. So he lifts the heavens and presses them above him, creating the three-dimensional world. And he holds the heavens above his head. And then he gets a pillar and he places it to hold up the heavens from the earth. And so the universe is born. And what's most interesting is Thanh Truc Choy actually left a bit of a token to his Vietnamese people so they would know that that was his badassery. He's the one who held up the earth. You can find the pillar that holds up the heavens and the earth in the, of course, most famous of caves in Vietnam, which is also the biggest cave in the world. So, you know, if you want to figure out what actually holds up heaven and earth, it's a pillar right in that mountain.
It's quite convenient.
Yeah, pretty badass.
Is that the same cave that has clouds in it? Has its own weather system?
It most certainly is. So not only does it have its own system of weather, it's also holding up all of heaven. So be thankful, Brandon.
I wish there were more caves just in general. They're always like the source of the coolest stories and mythologies. Maybe we've just taken away all the caves. Have you ever wondered, like, if maybe there were just way more caves back then than there are now? But now that I think about it, perhaps there are more caves now because we've made our own caves. You know, we've made subway systems and parking garages.
I mean, you are in the Midwest, which has more caves than anywhere else in the country. I mean, you can go on a cave tour in like every city in Illinois and Indiana and Kentucky.
That is true. But they're very boring caves. It's like, it's just like a big hole in the ground and there's a bunch of muddy water at the bottom. And they're like, don't jump in the water because it's cold and you'll drown or whatever.
Brandon, what you're describing is a cave.
Why do caves always seem cooler until you actually start thinking about them? That's the real question.
I mean, I feel like the world's biggest cave is going to be pretty badass.
Certainly so. I wonder if you can see a rainbow in that cave. Because if there's clouds, there should be a rainbow.
I bet you can. I'm pumped. I hope it rains when we're in that cave. I mean, sure, I'll be wet and hot and muggy, but it will be worth it because I got rained on inside a cave.
Do you think the cave occasionally gets hit by hurricanes and large seasonal water-based disasters?
I don't think so. I don't think there's any hurricanes within the cave. All right, moving on. The next question is for you, Brandon. What is the legend of Le Loi and the magical sword?
So Le Loi is actually my favorite myth to have read about so far, partially because it's actually based on a real person in history, a rebel fighter who fought the Ming Dynasty, which was in like the 1350s to like maybe the 1600s, somewhere around there. He was a rebel fighter who was patriotic to the Vietnamese, and he essentially used guerrilla tactics to basically fend off the Chinese Empire until they had taken so many losses that they had no choice but to cut a deal with the Vietnamese people to make them a tributary state. Basically, the Vietnamese people would bribe the Chinese to not kill them. And Le Loi was the man responsible for all that. So, you know, obviously he's a very heroic guy in Vietnamese history, and that's why they created these myths about him. The most prominent one, I think, is the sword that he had, whose origin is quite strange. The blade is fished out of the water by a fisherman, which, you know, you'd think it would rust, but magic prevents it from doing so. And Le Loi, I think, during one of his campaigns, comes across this fisherman, and the blade catches his eye, a moment of epiphany. And he's like, I need this blade. I don't know what for. I don't have the handle for it yet, but I need the blade. So he takes the blade with him. And then shortly after, he finds a dead tree upon a hill. And he has another epiphany. And he's like, I need to search inside this tree. I need to cut this tree down. And lo and behold, within this tree is the handle of a sword with no blade. And he's like, wait, this handle might just fit perfectly into this blade. And he puts them together.
Classic chocolate peanut butter situation.
Exactly. The chocolate, of course, being a deadly weapon and the peanut butter being the thing which contains it. Wait, no, that would be the opposite. That almost worked. Anyway, he puts the sword together and he's like, wow, this sword's fucking awesome. And it gives him courage. After he puts it together, he's like, I have it now. I have the key to military victory. And supposedly him having the sword is what turns his campaigns around. Because for a long time, he was on the back foot fighting these guerrilla campaigns. Like, he was constantly retreating with this militia army. The Ming Dynasty, whenever they found him, they would essentially crush him in battle. And he would have to, like, retreat for months to regain his forces. But with his newfound strength and his new sword, he is able to rally his troops together and start defeating the Ming armies in open battle. So eventually he wins, and he becomes king of a petty Vietnamese kingdom, just like a small holding in Vietnam. Because you have to remember, most of this region is, like, even though it's technically under the control of the Chinese, it's, like, highly autonomous, because, like, they couldn't really enforce laws or anything. So he becomes king of, like, a petty kingdom with, like, a few holdings. He ends up building a lot of roads, and he builds a lot of infrastructure in these cities, which is another reason why the Vietnamese like him so much in history. And eventually, the sword is lost because he is staring out at a lake one day, as you do, in quiet contemplation, as a heroic king might do. And what do you know, out of this lake suddenly emerges a great golden turtle. I think we've seen this golden turtle before. It's the same turtle that gave another dude a crossbow. Not a crossbow, a claw. A claw to make a crossbow.
This guy's just got a lot of weapons.
He's a very Second Amendment kind of turtle. This turtle's very pro-NRA, I'll tell you that. But the turtle's like, all right, you've had your fun, and now you must give me the sword back. He doesn't actually speak because he's a turtle. But the dude, whose name I totally remember, Le Loi, is like, of course, this turtle is telling me to return the sword because he's magical and the sword's magical, and therefore I cannot have the sword anymore. And so he casts the sword. He straight up just chucks the sword at the turtle. But the sword, fortunately, because it is magical, and the turtle, because the turtle is magical as well, snatches the sword up with his mouth and just eats it. Just straight up eats the sword. And then disappears back into the lake. You can visit the lake where the sword supposedly is. It's called, there's a Vietnamese name for it, which I've forgotten, but in English, it's like the Lake of the Magical Sword.
Put this on the list, Brandon. Do we have a list? We should have a list.
Certainly.
We will create a list, and all of our listeners can follow along as this list continues to be created. Because that magical sword lake is definitely going on the list.
Absolutely. I wonder if anyone's ever gone scuba diving in that lake. Has there been a serious state-level effort to recover this magical sword? You'd think that would have been really good when they were fighting the French and then the Japanese and the Americans to have such power behind them.
But the golden turtle said no. He is the wisest of the turtles.
Perhaps there's like a conspiracy theory. Like maybe they actually do have the sword and they're just not telling anyone. It's like the Vietnamese lost art.
I hope it's part of the Illuminati conspiracy. So, other than, like, giving courage, is there any sort of magic abilities of the sword? Like, can it chop off, like, 10 heads at once? Does it have any sort of magical abilities?
I don't remember being very impressed by the sword. I can look it up real quick. It gives him the strength of many men. So, I mean, it's just, like, +3 sword. See, I did make a D&D reference in the end. It just increases his dice roll. But it's not like it has, like, an AoE attack. You know, he can't hit multiple people. It's just like, if you're in a duel with this guy, you will certainly be losing.
Unless you have a sword that has the strength of 4 men.
No one has that sword. Come on. The Golden Turtle is generous with his swords, but not that generous.
So, Brandon, the most important question. Magical sword or magical crossbow?
Crossbow, definitely. Because the crossbow can shoot through, like, 10 people. I will take the crossbow any day.
You also have range on the crossbow, which you do not have on the sword.
The one problem with the crossbow, and this is something no one ever talks about, is to, like, cock a crossbow takes, like, a lot of strength. Like, it's very difficult to, like, pull those strings back because it's held in such high tension. That's what gives it the strength. It's basically like a rope is wrapped around a piece of wood. The wood's, like, what propels the arrow. But the rope is, like, coiled around so many times and held in so much tension that you have to apply, like, 100 pounds of force just to get the thing back. Like, it's quite difficult.
So, like, if you're in close contact, like, you might not have time to pull back that crossbow before they get you.
Exactly. A crossbow is, like, a one-and-done type of weapon. If someone's running at you, you basically have, like, one chance to hit them.
But as we've spoken of before, this seems to be some sort of magical heat-seeking crossbow.
It did have heat-seeking, yeah, shots. So I guess whoever made this myth was accounting for the fact that you could miss. There's a part of me that wonders if there actually was, like, a really cool crossbow that existed that that guy had.
Certainly, most mythology does come from some factual something. So, I mean, maybe he was really badass with the crossbow.
Just, like, never missed, yeah.
Whatever happened to that crossbow?
I honestly have no idea. I don't think it survived. I think it got destroyed somehow, but I can't remember. Maybe it was a crossbow that shot, like, 10 bolts.
But I thought the bolt was the claw of the golden turtle.
I think the claw was just the trigger.
Oh.
Which makes me wonder if maybe it was, like, a really ornate crossbow. Like, maybe it was a decorative crossbow with, like, a golden trigger, and it was, like, bejeweled and shit. People were like, whoa, this must be magical.
So, what do you think our chances are of meeting a golden turtle when we're in Vietnam?
Pretty high, I think. It seems to be that, like, everyone chills with the golden turtle at some point in their lives, so.
So we just need to hang around a lot of lakes, a lot of oceans, until we come across a golden turtle.
I think specifically, you have to come into conflict with the Chinese Empire at some point, so that's, like, the precondition.
So, like, can we get some, like, pebbles and, like, walk to the border and kind of throw them over the border?
Throw them at Chinese border security? Okay, yeah. And then the golden turtle will meet us.
If we don't get shot first.
Well, yeah, obviously.
And I guess we have to be worthy of the golden turtle.
So we have to, like, pose a significant threat to the Chinese government, I guess. Which, how hard could that be? Just, like, wear a shirt of, like, the Xi Jinping Winnie the Pooh meme.
That meme is illegal in the country of China, so we step over that border.
That's it. We're done for. That's the last anyone ever sees of us.
I guess we'd have to get back into Vietnam to get the golden turtle, because I don't think the golden turtle ever leaves Vietnam, so we will find this golden turtle. This is now the central purpose of this podcast. It is now a golden turtle podcast.
The hunt for the golden turtle? That'd be a good name for our vlog when we go over there.
That's all we're going to do. We're going to find one golden turtle, and when we find him, we'll get some sort of magical weapon.
Or at least a part.
Yeah, at least part of a magical weapon.
Some nunchucks?
Maybe some ninja stars?
Oh, that'd be cool. Did you see that they're now able to make magnetic guns? You can make a Gauss rifle now using just electrical power and magnets. It's like a gun, but it uses magnets instead of gunpowder.
Wow, environmentally friendly.
Yeah, so I want one of those. I want a golden magnet rifle.
I don't know if the golden turtle's going to give you a golden... A gun feels like cheating. Like, a gun's already pretty magical on its own.
How else am I going to take on the modern Chinese Empire?
That's a good point. There's only one of you and, what, 3 billion of them?
There's quite a few Chinese people, and a lot of them have some pretty powerful guns, so I'm going to need something extra special.
Maybe a shield might be better.
Captain America's shield?
Pretty badass.
But made of jade.
Yeah. All right, moving on to our final question, a entirely left turn. Who is Pham Minh Chen?
Well, I figured, you know, because Le Loi was like a leader of Vietnam, we can be like modern leader of Vietnam. It was going to be a good transition, you see.
You had it all planned out.
Exactly.
So Pham Minh Chen is the current prime minister of Vietnam. He became the prime minister in 2021. As we've kind of talked about before, many of the top-level positions in the Vietnamese government are a bit vague, and that seems to be very purposeful. It's, in many ways, the antithesis to perhaps the American Constitution, which is extremely convoluted and has so many contradictions that you can never get anything done. The Vietnamese Constitution is kind of the opposite, where it's so vague that you can pretty much do whatever you want, which is why they tend to be very efficient at most of the things they do. Now, obviously, this can also lead to certain corruptions, which we've seen in the housing market and other parts of the Vietnamese government, but it's not like that doesn't also exist in the United States government and most governments in the world. So it's not like anyone's getting away from corruption anytime soon. But before becoming prime minister in 2021, he served as the Secretary of State, which is a pretty high-level position. It's basically once you move from the top four positions, the general secretary, the prime minister, the president, and the judicial branch, which is like a Supreme Court of sorts, like the general secretary is like right under that, or Secretary of State. I guess it's pretty similar to the United States Secretary of State, very similar kind of going-ons. He's definitely in many ways living the Vietnam dream in the sense that he grew up in a poor community in the middle of Vietnam, the son of a farmer and a local civil servant, basically like someone that would work on here in the United States, a like school board perhaps is something similar, or work under a mayor, not a big time politician by any means. I guess in many ways you could compare this story to the story of LBJ. Grew up in a very poor family, grew up the son of a low level, though very well respected civil servant. And through a lot of hard work and dedication, he sent himself to school. He went to Ho Chi Minh for his undergraduate. He then went on to Romania to get a graduate degree in engineering and Romanian. So he's fluent in Romanian. Not sure exactly how helpful that is, but...
But that was back when the Soviet Union existed, right?
That's a good point. That's true. So he had that going for him. And then basically through a lot of greasing of palms and schmoozing and boozing, he worked his way up the political ladder. I mean, he basically started out as this kind of low-level lawyer, low-level civil servant, and worked his way up all the way to the state secretary in 2016 and then the prime minister in 2021, which, good for him. That's an incredible feat for anyone. I mean, you don't really see that a lot in America. Of course, as I said, the most modern example is LBJ, and he was the president 60 years ago. So
to obtain high-level power in the U.S., you essentially have to be part of the aristocracy, or you have to make a lot of deals with the aristocracy. But it's not as much the case in those newer countries like communist Vietnam.
Absolutely. So I'm very impressed with him as a politician. As far as the things he's actually done, there's not really a whole lot there. I mean, it's always hard to tell with the Vietnamese government because it is a censored news outlet run by the government. So what any one individual does, and it's a communist country, so it's not very often that any individual will take credit for something. So it's hard to see what any of these individuals do. As the current prime minister, as we've kind of talked about before, his position is mostly a position of grandeur. There's not really a whole lot underlying it. It's basically the lowest level of the like four top positions, but people who become prime ministers become presidents, and then people who become presidents often become general secretaries. So he's working his way up the ladder. So if you're a prime minister now, he may be the president in the next election, which I don't know when that is. They do an election every 3 years. So 2024, I think, will be the next election. So he could become president then, although he'd only become president if the current president steps into the general secretary role, which the general secretary was supposed to actually step down in 2021 and then said, fuck it, I'm not going to do that, because they had like term limits. But as we've talked about before, the Vietnamese government is so efficient that basically within a day, they're like, yeah, there's no more term limits, which is concerning. But this doesn't seem to be acting as a dictatorship necessarily. I'm not saying that the Vietnamese government is a dictatorship by any means, but they are extremely efficient when they want to do things. So come the next election, will our prime minister of Vietnam become president? It really depends on the kind of upper echelons and kind of where they move, which is a really interesting way that you don't see nearly as much in the United States. Because in the United States, if you become vice president, you're probably just going to be vice president, and that's about it. I mean, sure, there are vice presidents that became presidents, but there's not very many. It's not like, okay, first you become a congressperson, and then you become, you know, the secretary of this, and then secretary of that, then you're the secretary of state, and then you're a vice president, and you're a president. It's kind of, if you want to be the president, you just become the president. There's not like a lot of in between. Since Ho Chi Minh, you haven't really seen someone that goes from basically being a middle-level civil servant to straight to the top. You kind of have to work your way up. I mean, is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? I don't know. But at the very least, you're not getting politicians who don't know what they're doing. Like, at least you're getting people who are experienced. And perhaps that experience leads to certain corruptions, or, you know, who knows what else. But at the very least, they know what they're doing.
So you mentioned corruption, and now I'm curious, are there any scandals that Pham Minh Chinh is involved in?
I'm sure there are. There weren't any specifically that I could find, but I will say that most of the research I did on him was through Vietnamese-specific news outlets, so I didn't do a lot of European news outlets. I think I might have done one news outlet that's basically like a BBC of sorts. But compared to the people, you know, the president and the general secretary and a lot of people he works with, he's pretty clean, which perhaps that's even more suspicious. Like maybe he's too clean. I don't know. It's hard to say. And like I said, it's kind of hard to say what policies he's enacted as the Secretary of State or as the current prime minister. I mean, partly because the prime minister is mostly a position of grandeur, as I said in the past. There's no like actual power under it. So I don't know. I mean, unless he moves on to a position like a president or general secretary, or even if he moves into the version of Congress that they have, which he was never really a part of. So it's kind of hard to see like what his leanings were. It's not like the US government where you can look at like every single vote a senator's done. So it's a bit of a challenge, but I'm sure he's done some shady dealings in the past. I would be very surprised if he was the first politician on earth to have a clean nose.
Well, I mean, it's a good sign. If you're Googling any American politician, chances are the first thing you will notice is their long list of scandals. Like, I can't think of a single politician that doesn't have at least, like, three different controversies attached to their Wikipedia article. But at the same time, state-controlled media, so they would suppress any potential scandals. So it's tough to say.
And he's only been prime minister for just about a year now. And, of course, this last year has been pretty COVID-heavy. I mean, if you kind of look at the economics and the political kind of movings of Vietnam since COVID, they really haven't done a lot. I mean, they've handled COVID pretty well, certainly better than the United States and some other countries have, but there haven't been a whole lot of political movements in the last couple of years in Vietnam, at least that I know of.
That doesn't surprise me. If you're taking COVID seriously, you're not, like, the whole point is to not do anything. So yeah, Vietnam has done a uniquely good job of handling COVID, especially considering how if you call an ambulance in a lot of the country, it's going to take half an hour for you to get to the hospital.
Yeah, it's very much like the rural United States, but imagine the state of Kansas with 66% of the U.S. population, because that's just how it is. I mean, as we've talked about before, even though Vietnam's population is pretty large, there's only two cities over a million people in population, and maybe five cities over 500,000 people in population. So unless you're in one of those big cities, which is, of course, Ho Chi Minh, Da Nang, Haiphong, Hanoi, and Saigon, you're in a very rural community, and you're just not near, or rather, I should say, it's harder to get access to the things that you may need, just like the way in many parts of the U.S., it's hard to get that kind of access. So I don't know if that makes it easier or harder relative to COVID, but I suppose if you're in a smaller community, you're also in a close-knit community, which means, right, it would spread easier. So Vietnam has certainly done a spectacular job. I mean, even looking at their big cities, I mean, Ho Chi Minh and Hanoi have done very well with COVID. So they've been doing something, right? And those numbers will continue to move in that direction. And I guess it depends what you consider right, as in COVID regulations. It's hard to say, but I mean, certainly economically, Vietnam hasn't suffered the way many countries have, including the U.S. So they're doing something.
That's all to say that it doesn't surprise me that there's not recent controversy surrounding politicians, because my feeling is that there's generally just a lot of goodwill towards the government for handling COVID in Vietnam.
All right, Brandon. Well, we are coming to the end of today's episode. Are there any final thoughts, feelings, opinions on the absolutely wonderful country of Vietnam?
Let's just hope Phan Minh Chinh gets his own private meeting with the Golden Turtle soon, because I want to see what kind of weapon he gets.
We can only hope. All right. Well, you can find me at AustinLugo12.
You can find me at anything connected to Nom Nom Project, or even the With Nothing to Say podcast, because, of course, I work on it all.
And you can find this podcast wherever you hear podcasts. You can also find us on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube at The Nom Nom Project. And for exclusive content and early access, go to patreon.com/lifethroughfiction. That's patreon.com/lifethroughfiction. And thank you all for listening.